Welcome to the English version of the INSS podcast. This morning, we are dealing with Jordan after the Arab Spring and the bilateral relations between Israel and Jordan. With me is Asher Sasser, Senior Research Fellow at the Moshe Dayan Center in the Tel Aviv University, and a known scholar on Jordan, and I am Oded Eran, senior researcher at the INSS and a former ambassador of Israel to Jordan. We are now 8 years after the beginning of what is called the Arab Spring. And obviously this has had an impact on the Middle East, shattering states and destroying infrastructure, destroying society. How do you think, Asher, the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan has gone through all these upheavals? And what is, in your view, the future dangers that were created by the Arab Spring, in Jordan particularly?
Well, first of all, I think it's noteworthy that Jordan has come through the Arab Spring well, relatively speaking, in comparison to its neighbors. And Jordan has always been referred to as a relatively unstable state, a state that people expect to be unstable. But the historical record, including the Arab Spring, is different. And Jordan has proved to be an island of relative stability. And the question is, why is that so? In comparison between Jordan and its neighbors, Iraq, Syria, and the other partners in the what is called the Fertile Crescent, I think what is outstanding in Jordan and is a factor of its relative stability, Jordan is not a country of minorities. When I say minorities, I mean religious minorities, sects. The great majority of the Jordanian people, well over 90% of the people, are Sunni Muslim speakers of Arabic. You cannot say that of either Lebanon, Syria, or Iraq. And as a result, I think that is a major contribution to its longevity. People will say, wait a second, what about Jordanians and Palestinians? True. There is this division between Jordanians and Palestinians, and it is an important division, but Jordanianness and Palestinianness are relatively new. They are 20th century creations. And I would say particularly both of them worthy of mention post-1967. Whereas Sunni, Shia, Christians and Muslims goes back to the 7th century. It's a much deeper story and sentiment. So that's one factor. Then there are three more things that I would mention very briefly, and that is specifically to Jordan. I think often, certainly in Abdullah's time, Abdullah I, and then King Hussein, people tended to speak of Jordan as if it was a one-man show. It's just the king. And I think we have to bear in mind three other factors that contribute to Jordan's relative stability. One is that the king is backed up by a very consistent, stable, trans-Jordanian political elite, the great families of the East Bank. And these rotate in power and have been for generations. You see the same names repeating themselves. The present Prime Minister, Omar Razaz, is the son of Munif Razaz. Everyone is the son of. They've gone back generations, and there is a certain stability here. The second point is the security establishment, which has remained loyal to the regime. And the third is Jordan's geopolitical centrality. Countries from the United States to Japan are prepared to pay into the Jordanian economy to keep Jordan stable because it is a centerpiece of Middle Eastern stability.
But Asher, recently, and when I say recently, I mean 2 years at least, I have noticed the beginning of resentment in this Jordanian elite regardless of whether it's Palestinian or Transjordanian or East Jordanian, I see signs of resentment directed to the king himself. For the first time, I see signs of criticism of the role of the monarchy. People are speaking openly about the need to have a constitutional monarchy, that is to say, monarchy without executive powers. And this is, I think, a challenge that you couldn't notice or see 10 years ago, 5 years ago. Today you see it openly, you hear it openly, and this doesn't come from extreme Palestinians or extreme Orthodox Muslims. So I begin to detect some signs of, I won't call it instability, but certainly something which shatters, begins to shatter the old regime. Secondly, yes, you're right about minorities. What about the new phenomena called Syrian refugees, which creates a different Jordanian society, whether the Syrians are citizens or not? They are beginning to be a factor numerically, and eventually they will be a factor politically.
Well, first of all, the question of the challenge to the king's authority, you're absolutely right, and it goes back even further. This emerged, I would say, in the first few years of Abdullah II's reign. He has not had or has not established the same kind of monarchical authority or monarchical centrality or presence that his father had. He did make an effort in an earlier part of his reign to change the elite somewhat and to incorporate more people who are of Palestinian origin in positions of influence. And the old elite, the Transjordanian elite, were very unhappy with that kind of thinking on Abdullah's part and made their criticism very well known. There is a tendency of criticism to come to the king himself from within the Jordanian establishment for two reasons. One is this certain sense that they have that Abdullah is open to the incorporation of others into the elite. And the other factor has to do with the economy. Jordan's economy has been in trouble for a considerable length of time. And this is having an effect on the informal social contract between the regime and the East Bankers. It is very difficult for the regime to provide the East Bankers with a kind of political subsidy and support that it used to do in exchange for their political loyalty. As a result, if you see disturbances in Jordan, very often they're in the south. Huge demonstrations held against the regime in the south.
In the base of support,
basically. The bedrock of support. Precisely because the regime, in its economic difficulties, is finding it difficult to maintain the kind of economic support that it had for the East Bankers in the past. The Palestinians, even though they are not well integrated into the upper echelons of the regime, are the backbone of the economy. And there is a certain antagonism coming from the East Bankers that the Palestinians, who are not as loyal as we are better off than we are in this new socioeconomic reality. And as a result, there is a measure of criticism coming both from Palestinians who don't feel integrated enough and from East Bankers who feel that they're not getting their fair share. As I say, Abdullah in his personality hasn't been able to close the gap as King Hussein used to be able to do, I would say, more successfully. And there is this challenge, and the Arab Spring has only brought this challenge more to the fore, this idea of a constitutional monarchy, although this has been raised before. The question that those who wish to establish some kind of constitutional monarchy have to ask themselves, what is the alternative to the monarchy? And this is where they come short. They don't have a good answer. And there is a tendency, therefore, even though there is this criticism, to gravitate, to continue to support the monarchy for lack of any better choice.
Yeah.
They do not want to see the Palestinians take over in a democracy. That's the last thing they would like to see. So over-democratization doesn't serve the purposes of these East Bankers.
Right.
So they have to be careful. And therefore, when it comes down to making the final choice, they still rally around the monarchy, even if they have the criticism that you mentioned. And the criticism is genuine. But the alternatives are not as appealing as they would like them to be.
I want to come back to the issue of the demographic composition of Jordan. Jordan is a country, maybe it's leading in the absorbing refugees in the world. Waves ever since 1948 itself, then 67, then 1991, then 2003, the second American invasion into Iraq. Then, of course, the 1.5 million refugees resulting from the upheavals and the civil war in Syria. I begin to think that these Syrians, by and large, are not going back to Syria. The regime in Syria doesn't want them. They basically are Sunnis who ran away from Syria. They reduce the Sunni element in Syria, which is the desire of the present regime, certainly. And eventually, by intermarriages and other processes, Jordan will have to give an answer to a political answer, civil rights, political rights, to these 1.5 million Syrians and thousands, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis who are still living in Amman, basically. And that may change the balance of political power in Jordan. This may have a mixed effect on the economy of Jordan to begin with. In addition, 1.5 million people creates a water issue, infrastructures, schools, hospitals. How is Jordan going to cope with all these issues on the background of Arab states, oil producing, not so keen to continue their financial support, and in the shortage of finances from other donor countries who have to wrestle with close to 10 million Syrian refugees in Syria itself, displaced in Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon. How is Jordan going to cope with all these issues?
If foreign aid is not forthcoming, Jordan will face, I think, an impossible situation. In the meantime, at least thus far, after the rioting we had in the last summer over the income tax law.
And it's not over yet.
Well,
still debated in the committees.
No, in fact, the law just a few days ago was passed in Parliament.
But there are still murmurs, protests.
Yes, but I think they've passed the worst of it. Right. They've made some amendments, and I think they'll get it through. And already there are economic commentaries coming out that Jordan has done the right thing, and the IMF is satisfied with what they're doing. Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Qatar have come through in the last few months with, I think, $2 billion together. So they may find that they may be a little tight-fisted in handing over the money to Jordan, but so far they've come through. If they do not continue to come through, Jordan will have an insoluble problem. But there is an issue here, I would say, on the Syrian refugee issue, I would say three things. One, we're not sure about the numbers. The number a million, million and a half is often used. But the number of people actually registered with UN refugee
600,000, 700,000
is a lot less.
Right.
There is a possibility, and this won't be the first time, that the Jordanians deliberately inflate the numbers of refugees.
To get money.
Exactly. And they did that with the Palestinians. They're past masters at this. They've been doing it for a long time. So probably the number of Syrians is not as large as is mentioned. That's number one. Number two, when the Jordanians allowed the Syrian refugees to come in, they were very careful to allow in Syrians and not Palestinians.
Yes.
Even though Palestinian refugees were also trying to get out of Syria, the Jordanians did not let them in. So there are some in Jordan who say, you know, these Syrians may be a balance in the demographic accounting between us and the Palestinians.
Yeah.
So it's not a negative. It may even be a plus in certain political calculations. Thirdly, now that the situation in Syria is stabilizing, maybe some of them will go back. Some of the refugees who came from Iraq did go back to Iraq. Not all those who came are still in Jordan. So maybe some of them will return. But the key here is the extent to which the Arab states, the wealthy Arab states, the United States, the IMF, continue to back Jordan. If they do, I think the Jordanians can muddle through just as they've been muddling through all the time until now. But the key here is a stable flow of foreign aid, which if that is not forthcoming, they will hit a difficult spot.
We have not touched yet upon the question of the relations with Israel. As we both know, there is, you can call it a schizophrenic relationship. On the one end, we know that the security cooperation has never been so good. We certainly in Israel are interested in continuing the stability in political and otherwise stability in Jordan. And we do as much as we can in order to assist in the direction. But on the other end, the diplomatic, the people-to-people relationship are sometimes frozen, sometimes they are sort of lukewarm relationship. In the creating disappointment on both sides. The question is, did we in Israel do everything on our side to warm up the relations and live up to the expectation or some of the expectation on the Jordanian side, on our side? I, for example, I have misgivings about the sort of reluctant Israeli attitude to cooperation infrastructure. I always thought that the airport in Aqaba should be used by Israel as well, as offered by the King Hussein Jordan generally, the port in Aqaba. And so can we do something to improve the relations in the civilian side of the relations?
Well, I think we have to look at this from two different levels. You're perfectly right about this mutual disappointment coming from both sides. And the issue of the infrastructure, the Red Dead Canal and the port and the airport, all is true and aggravating as far as the Jordanians are concerned. But there's a bigger issue that rests underneath all of this. The driving motivation of the Jordanians to enter the peace treaty with Israel in the first place was to be a partner with Israel in the solution of the Palestinian question. What King Hussein believed was that Oslo was going to be implemented. The Jordanians went into the negotiation with Israel, and the agreement with Rabin and Hussein is on the strategic foundation of common cause in the joint solution of the Palestinian question, also to Jordan's satisfaction. That is, that there would be a Palestinian state, and the Palestinian issue would be solved in the West Bank and Gaza, that the idea of Jordan is Palestine would be out of the books forever, that this would never be raised again, and that Jordan's long-term stability would be secured by the establishment of the two-state solution. Well, this didn't happen. From the Jordanian point of view, this is the fundamental disappointment. The continuation of the Israeli occupation, the continuation of the relative instability between Israel and the Palestinians, the problem of Jerusalem and Temple Mount, all of this from the Jordanian point of view is a bomb about to explode in their faces.
But Asher, if I sit today in Amman, which I, as ambassador, liked very much, sitting in Amman, I begin to wonder, as a Jordanian, is the whole idea of a Palestinian state, a functioning Palestinian state, is a reality, a feasible reality, looking at the way Palestinians handled their issues, the rift between Gaza and Ramallah, the rift inside the leadership, the lack of a successor, a non-successor, the possibility of a civil war among the Palestinians once Abu Mazen fades away from politics. And as a Jordanian, I would be concerned with the possible impact on Jordanian stability, in domestic stability, with the possibility of what happens on the West Bank somehow rotates to the East Bank. So do you think that the Jordanians are still enamored with the idea of a Palestinian state as we always looked at it?
The Jordanians, I don't think, have ever been really enamored with a Palestinian state. It's a question of priorities and alternatives. They ask themselves, if there is no Palestinian state, if the present situation continues, what does that mean for us? All the weaknesses that you mention about Palestinian politics and society, I assume, and I'm sure that they are aware of them, and they take that into account. But what bothers them most is that the present situation will run out of control, that there will be a major confrontation sooner or later between the Israelis and the Palestinians, whether it is over the settlements in the West Bank or over Jerusalem and Temple Mount. And the end result will be hundreds of thousands of Palestinians being pushed from the West Bank into Jordan. Now, you may say that is an unrealistic scenario. It probably won't happen. And Israel probably wouldn't do that or couldn't do that. But the fact of the matter is that the Jordanians think of this all the time.
What is called the Watan al-Badil.
Exactly, the alternative homeland. That the Israelis have this at the back of their minds. Now, every time when in Israel, some member of Knesset or some minister comes up and says Jordan is Palestine, and this happens every few weeks, the Jordanians register and think of this as a realistic possibility. What Crown Prince Hassan once called demographic aggression. When the Jordanians recently decided to discontinue the arrangement over Naharaim and Tzofar, people referred, in Israel people said, an interesting article was written a while ago in the Jordanian press by Marwan Moasher, the
former minister and ambassador to Israel.
Exactly. And Marwan, let's say, is not an extremist of any kind and very knowledgeable of both Israel and Jordan. Marwan had written an article a few months ago in one of the Jordanian newspapers where he said, this threat that I just mentioned is hovering over Jordan all the time. And the fact that the Israelis are not doing what we think that they should do, we have to take our own action to register our displeasure with the continuation of the situation. And he suggested a few things. One of them was to discontinue the arrangement over Naharaim and Tzofar. He suggested a few other things as well, not to buy gas from Israel and a few other steps. The article, the whole gist of the article was, we the Jordanians are under threat from Israel's present policy. We have to register our displeasure in no uncertain terms. That is what they just did. And I think they feel, whether rightly or wrongly, they feel threatened by the continuation of the status quo, the fact that we are not progressing towards a Palestinian state. And even if a Palestinian state has all the shortcomings that you mentioned, of which I'm sure they are aware, the alternative for them, in their mind and their analysis, is worse.
Yeah, I think that I fully agree with you. And I think that Israel is not doing enough on the Palestinian issue. That is to say, we don't need to create, from the Jordanian point of view, we don't need to create the state tomorrow, but we need to do what one of the foreign secretary of states in the United States said, create the impression of movement towards the Palestinian state. And I also think that on the bilateral issue, we should have done a lot more. And maybe we could prevent this article by Marwan Mawasher that really surprised me as well, because he was, as foreign minister and as ambassador to Tel Aviv, was very balanced and very forthcoming in his attempt to build the relationship. Well, I think we ran out of time, and thank you, Asher, for
thank you.
Cooperation.
Thank you very much.